Welcome back to Getting Committed Podcast. This time we're joined with Nazareth head coach Chris Bowder. Chris has been previously as a player, he was at Hamilton back in when he was playing, and then he was also with prep school at Gunnery, Bishop's Kent Select, not just Kent Select, that's South Kent, right?
Bishop Kearney Selects.
And now he's moved over to head coach Nazareth, and last season they had a pretty successful year by all means. And he's going into his third season, I believe, Chris?
Third season, yeah. Our third season starts September.
So, yeah, let's just chat a little bit like last season, how that went for you. And then let's talk about, you know, what you're looking for and how you're looking forward to next season as well.
Absolutely. Well, first, thanks for having me. We appreciate it. Great to talk. We had a great little conversation before coming on air here, and that was fun. But yeah, so as you said, you know, I started at Gunnery, was there for 15 years and actually coached the boys side there for 12 of the 15 years and then shifted to the women's game with Selects Academy and the inaugural program there at Bishop Kearney. And now I'm fortunate to be at Nazareth, you know, starting my fourth year at the school and third year with the program. And we've been fortunate, Sam, like we've had really good success to start. You know, proud of what the team has done. We, you know, we finished 18-5-3 last year, second place in the league, had a great win over number three team in the country at the time. And ultimately I think we climbed as high as around 11th in the polls. But it was a great season. And, you know, we're really fortunate. We have great kids. I think, you know, you're a coach, right? I mean, you certainly need talent, but you need high end character kids. And we have that. And I think it takes a pretty special kid to, you know, to jump on to a new program right away. Certainly there's the enticement of immediate playing time, but there's also an incredible level of uncertainty that comes with that, right? Like who else is coming? How are you going to be? What do you like as a coach? And so obviously, you know, we're really proud, but appreciative of, you know, the kids we have and, you know, the effort that they put in. And so, So we're really proud of what they've done. We're excited about year three, jumping into that. You know, I think we talked before a little bit about kind of what, you know, what is our focus or what are our expectations as we jump into our third year. And I really think it's honestly at the core, it's just we're just continue to focus on our culture and getting a little bit better every day. We've lived and learned a lot in 2 years, you know, trial and error. Not everything's been perfect, but I would say that, you know, the thing that we're most focused on is actually connection, right? We live in such a world where, you know, people, and in this case, players can be so easily distracted, social media, their phones, so on. And it's a part of the world, right? We're not going to get rid of it, but we really are focused as a group on, you know, making intentional and deeper connections with each other. We think we have a great culture, a family type culture. But culture, it's never static, right? It's always evolving. And so, I don't know, it's kind of a funny analogy, but we talk about our culture and our relationships being like a water well, right? Like we're looking for depth of relationship more than just kind of the surface part of a river or whatever you want to take another analogy. And we really think that if we can create scenarios where our players, the returners, the new players, have opportunities to create those deeper connections, that's going to just really fortify our culture that much more. And the success through that shared vulnerability, through that desire to play for each other, because we know each other, that'll take us to, you know, hopefully an even another level in terms of success on the ice, wins and losses.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely something. Like looking at your roster list here, you've got girls that from, although you're in New York, you know, you don't just have New York players, which is something that's interesting for all of schools. I think, especially in the UCHC, a lot of the players kind of get recruited from the same kind of area. And I think that kind of speaks to your success in some ways and what you're trying to do. So you have players from Detroit, Minnesota, one girl from Sweden, a Florida girl, another girl from Michigan. Like, so you're kind of all over the place, which kind of right now during Corona time and COVID, it must be a lot harder to build those connections. So I'd be interested to know, like, are you doing anything as a team right now? And the impact that having players from all over the country and the world, what that means and how, you know, we can touch about how you recruit them and what you're looking for in players in a second, but what does that mean for your program with all the different personalities and let's say like kind of the culture traits that they bring from wherever they come from?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I, you know, I'll hit both of those. You know, how we're staying in touch, again, we're being really intentional about it. We meet as a group once a week right now for some Zoom call stuff. And we'll actually start to communicate as kind of a 2021 roster next week. Our incoming kids, we have four incoming players. One is from Alaska, so that expands our geographic footprint even more. You know, we'll start to do that next year. But beyond that, I mean, I don't know if people think it's cheesy or not, but Tuesdays, Thursdays, we do some 10 a.m. coffee time where we'll set up a Zoom and anybody who wants to just jump on, we can jump on and really just a laid back setting to drink some coffee and shoot the breeze with each other. And then Wednesdays are our, we call them our Wow News Wednesdays, where we assign three kids to put in our group chat just some positive news happening. Could be a reflection on the year. It could be a highlight from the season. It could be, you know, just something that happened in their world or something in the world in general. I mean, we're in such an uncertain time with COVID and there's a lot of, you know, unsettling news that's out there. So we want to kind of pump positivity into what we're doing and into the lives of our players. So we do that, you know, and then our, as coaches, we tend to, through both Zoom and just text message, you know, we'll be in touch with all of our players individually, kind of split the team up every week, reach out, make sure they're doing okay, and make sure we're keeping those connections going. So that's kind of what we're doing right now to, you know, to stay in touch with each other. The girls are buying into it, which has been fun. And it's just fun. It kind of replaces those visits to the office when you're on campus where they just pop in and you shoot the breeze for a little bit. And those, as I, you know, I'm happy to talk about more later, but those I think are some of the most important moments for a coach with this generation. In terms of the other question, it's a good question in terms of, you know, they're coming from so many different geographic locations, different teams, different cultures. I believe in it. Like, we know what we want and what we don't want in terms of the character of players, right? Like, one thing we'll tell players when they come on visits is we'll say, you know, everywhere you go, you're going to hear from that coach that we want high character kids, right? Who doesn't? But really, you know, our encouragement to you as a recruit is ask what that means. Like, dig down deeper. What does it mean? What's a high character kid at Nazareth? What's a high character kid at fill in the blank school? And we really think hard about that as a staff. And so we feel like we know kind of the type of character that we want. And so although they come from different geographic areas, there's this common value set that we think they have. And that kind of ties them together in the beginning. And let's be honest, like, it's a loose tie at the beginning because they're coming from all over the place, but it's a commonality that they share. And ultimately it's our starting point for everything else that we do in terms of getting to know each other, building the culture. And honestly, Sam, like, celebrating differences, like, let's not pretend that we're all the same here. Like, we need to acknowledge that we're different and we need to celebrate those differences in the locker room, outside the locker room. And if we don't do that, then we're just kind of fooling ourselves to think we're all the same person. We're all the same human. We might have the same goals, but ultimately, you know, we have to, as I said before, that connectivity, get to know each other deeply and then value each other for our differences. And so that's like, that's intentional messaging that we have in our program that we talk about a lot. And I think, and we think as a staff, that it helps build that cohesion that we were talking about earlier. So it kind of starts with a similar value set, but then an acknowledgement of differences, a respect for those differences, and appreciation and a celebration of those differences and what we all bring kind of to this family stew that we have that we're cooking every day.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely nail on the head. And you know, as the game becomes bigger, there's going to be more differences, because more people are playing from all different places in the world. And if you have that accepting idea, and how we talked about, the game is one language, it's not you know, regardless of whoever you're playing with, it's still the same game of hockey. Even if it's boys or girls, it's still the same game. So I think that's really, really great approach. And I think a lot of people listening to this will listen to that and realize that just because I don't live in New York doesn't mean this is off my, it's not my, right? So we kind of touch on that recruiting piece and how we talked about your roster right now. So, you know, I'm interested of, because you are a new program, you have built it from scratch. So I'm sure you put a lot of roads into the recruiting, like you, to get these players. So, you know, what are you doing? Like, you are attending showcases, and obviously now, right now, everything's on pause or until there is light at the end of the tunnel or rinks. I'm sure you probably maybe only have the Swedish girls skating right now because everything's open there and everyone else is on their couch.
So
I'd be interested to know, like, you know, what, how you go about your recruiting, and you don't have to dive too much into it, but, you know, what you look for if you were to walk in a rink, that was, so it's first 10 minutes. You know, and how you kind of identify, like, oh, that player, or I like how she carries herself, or what you kind of, you know, how you go through about that things.
Yeah, that's a good question. So in knowing kind of, in knowing what we want, right, and what we don't want, I do think that you have to be willing to cast the net wide at first, kind of the top of the funnel, because the truth is that really good players who are really good people probably have a lot of options. And so if you think you're going to go after five really good players for three spots and get three of those five, it's going to be tough. So to your point, like, we, you know, we'll put miles on the car. We'll go everywhere we can go. We'll split it up as a coaching staff. We've had the conversations ahead of time. Like, I'm fortunate, Rhea Code, our assistant coach, we've been together for 2 years now, so we know each other. We know what we want in players. So I have complete confidence and trust in her to be on the road and, you know, find the right kids for us. But yeah, we're going to go on the road. We're going to hit all the major tournaments, starting really in the kind of, that next cycle for us starts in, well, back up a little bit. Like, you asked about our recruiting class. We're fortunate. Our kids all went early decision, right? So when we started with the New England prep tournaments and kind of the Wizards showcase at the new year, that's our, starts our cycle for the next year. And so starting with that, through nationals, through the summer camps, we'll start to really identify, you know, a pretty large list of kids that we think fit us from a playing perspective. And then we'll start to get to know them a bit better as people, as families, let them get to know us, because the fit has to go both ways, and start to narrow it down from there with the hopes, honestly, we don't mandate it, but with the hopes of every year completing our recruiting class with that early decision deadline, you know, that we think, you know, it just helps us get kids that we know really want to be there. So in terms of kind of, you know, what you're looking for once you kind of, when you go into a rink, I think everybody's different. And I know that people are going to, you know, listen to this. When I talk to families about it, I talk about, a friend of mine once said, you know, it's like buying a car, meaning there's all these different brands, there's all these different colors. And what you like in a car is not what I like in a car, and vice versa. And so ultimately, you know, what I like and what we like as a staff at Nazareth might not be the same as everyone else. And that's okay. We're really confident and comfortable in that, because we really believe in our approach here. But yeah, jumping into a rink, you know, big picture, if I'm going to watch a game, I'm looking for someone who's impacting the game consistently, right? Like, and that could be anything. That could be, you know, maybe your compete level's through the roof. You know, maybe you're a shutdown D with a great IQ, effective puck mover. Maybe you're a high-end offensive kid who's always around the net. But being very direct about it, you know, if you're not impacting the game regularly at the U19 level, it's going to be hard to think that you're going to translate into an impact player at the high-end Division One or Division Three, Division One level. And so we're really looking for those kids who one way or another are consistently impacting the game. Specifically for us, you know, the first things we're looking at, compete spirit. Like, we want kids who are willing to get after it, play hard, play with passion, play heavy in puck pursuit, you know, play just as hard with back pressure, play 200 feet. You know, that for us is a non-negotiable. We want kids who are willing to compete all the time. And then next, I would think like skating, IQ, skill. I think they all go together. I mean, we want to play fast. We want kids who can get around the ice, you know, I don't want to say effortlessly, but, you know, with some jam and some tempo. But if you have skill and you don't have IQ, it's hard. You know, your skill gets stunted pretty quickly because you're yeah. probably making poor decisions. So I would take IQ and skating over skill if I were to just look at it. But I do think all of it has to go together. And then honestly, the third thing we're looking at as we watch kind of a full game is what I'd call, and I've heard it in a different podcast, so I can't take credit for it, but just the idea of failure response, right? Like we're going to fail in practice. We're going to fail in games. We're going to make mistakes. What's your response on ice, attitude on the bench, interaction with your teammates? You know, we had a kid on campus recently, and you know, the thing that we said to the kid is, we love you as a player, but the thing we like even more is came to watch you play. You didn't hit the ice for like 6.5 minutes due to special teams, but you were jamming on the bench. Team scored. You were the first one fired up about it. Your energy was positive. You know, you weren't moping because you hadn't seen the ice in a bit. And that kind of failure response piece, the more I coach, the more it matters because we're going to hit a lot of adversity in games throughout the year. And how you respond, you know, that matters more than anything. So those are, I guess, three things that we're really looking at from a micro level, but macro level, I mean, we want kids who impact the game.
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely something that a lot of girls have to be aware of as well. Like this year, we've had a couple of players at our program who coaches have commented to me about how they, their kind of behavior and what they do on the bench and how they're looking for that. And even, we have a player here who's going, she's committed to Horus, but it was really noticeable that the coach said to me, she's the only player that foam rolled after a game. And he's mm-hmm. been like, we're in Minnesota and she was the only one doing the cool down and yeah. kind of treating her body right. And you think like you've got Dallas there, you've got OHA, you got Shattuck, all the top scores. And it was kind of one of those things that kind of stood out to me a lot as well about how coaches are looking at everything. Yeah. And they're not just looking at your on-ice product because sometimes you don't have a good game, but that doesn't mean that you're not a good hockey player. So I think a lot of those things that girls will listen to this and take away and you can only control what's in, you know, what you can control.
Yep.
And one of those things that you touch on is really good. So what I'm interested, like personally for my own kind of thing is like, so how do you get a player like, what is her name? The Swedish girl, right? So
yeah.
The UCHE league is getting stronger. And I think yep. Arcadia are coming in next year with Kelsey's yep. team. Right. And so it's becoming a really good place to play. And it's becoming, is Suffolk moving into it or are they moving somewhere else?
They're moving somewhere else.
Okay. So there's a new league coming in there. So like she plays in the SDHL, which is a really good league to play in. There's Olympians playing in that league. There's 28-year-olds. And yeah. if you're playing in there before college, it's a really good level to develop. And there's a couple of girls that I know personally are playing that league too. So how do you sell Nazareth to her? Right, I'm sure she's got some options, and she's obviously chosen you guys because, yes, your academics are probably good, but also from the hockey standpoint, you know, you must have done. What's your selling point for Nazareth in terms of how do you bring a player of that caliber to the school? And I think that's a really good point as well for a lot of players looking at it. If I was to be, you know, if you have a growth mindset, you want to go somewhere where the players are better than you, right? Yep. And she's a very good defenseman, so you'd be okay. Well, this is a statement of intent in some ways that they mean business.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a really good question. The first and foremost, like we need to be consistent with our recruiting message in terms of what we offer. I think when you're consistent and you're organized and you have vision and then you have strategy to execute on that vision, I think that appeals to the type of kid that you want. And so in this case, Jessica is very, very focused and committed in all aspects of her life. You know, I think this past term she was a 4.0 GPA in our business marketing program. Is as you mentioned, kind of that foam rolling, routine oriented, prepared type of a kid. And I think that yes, Nazareth is a great school. I think she felt comfortable. She liked the area, Pittsford, Rochester, the campus, all of that. But I think there was a connectivity in terms of approach, in terms of how we operate as a coaching staff with a focus on preparation, with a focus on controlling the controllables, as you just mentioned, and the way that she approaches her world and her life. And so there was that fit there. And so it's interesting, you know, you asked me, how do we sell her on Nazareth? It really becomes more about, is there a connection? Is there a fit? Are the things that we're saying resonating with her? You know, did it take some conversation to get her here in year one as a 20-year-old freshman and a brand new team with, you know, 22 other 18-year-old freshmen? And it did, right? It did. And there was a lot of conversation about, you know, the league we play in and the ability to jump in right away and, you know, our commitment to developing her and all of our players to the maximum of their ability. I don't know how much that mattered, Sam, just to be honest with you. Like, she's never said to me, like, that's why I came. I think for her and for us, it was just from the first time I spoke to her on the phone after, you know, it was actually Harry and through his camps that we got to know her a little bit. There was just a connection, right? I think we spoke for 45 minutes on the phone the first time we talked to each other, and we talked about everything, you know, life, family, you know, coming over here, the league she played in, academics. And ultimately in the end, you know, we found commonality with each other. And so it's not, I wish I could give you some like silver bullet that I said this to her to convince her to come. But in the end, it was like, this is who we are. And from the time we started, like one thing I learned being at Gunnery and being at Selects Academy, you know, Selects Academy also being a first year program, was you have to be really confident in what you're doing. So when we talked to Jessica, when we talked to our entire first year class, the conversation was, we're going to be good right away. And that's not arrogant. That's us believing in what we're doing, believing in the school that we're selling, believing in the product that we're putting out there. And ultimately, like we said, like we're not bringing in below average players just to start a program. We want high end kids. And if you want to be a part of it, we'd love to have you. If you don't, we respect that, because it's scary. There's an uncertainty to it. But in the end, you have to believe in what you're doing. And, you know, it's like anything. You know, we started to get some kids and some other kids heard about it, and we started to get more kids. And honestly, by the time Jessica came along, she was probably one of our last couple of recruits for year one. We were able to share with her, like, hey, this is what we have coming in. There isn't much uncertainty for you in terms of the hockey end. What do you think? And in the end, we're lucky to have her. And I can't speak high enough about her. She's such a fantastic kid.
Well, yeah, I think, like, I was looking back here on your first 10 games, you went 10-0 as the program started. You beat one team 14-0, 10-0, 7-0, 9-2, 4-1, 7-3. Last one was 5-0. So I think, yeah, you were very good off the bat. You were true to what you had. And that consistency as well. If you look at this year, has kind of been on parity as what you had last year as well. Maybe if things change, it's pretty much similar. I'm sure you're wanting to grow on that, but you've been pretty dominant across the board in your league, and I'm sure you're looking to grow on that. So what you kind of talk to your recruits about and how you go about your approach, it's been true. It's come, you know, so it's not really just hot air. It's what you're expecting, and it's what you deliver. So I think that says a lot as well. So your structured, your consistent approach to the game is something that the girls have all bought into, and it seems from the outside looking in, it's definitely something that your program really, you know, has a lot to boast about and has a lot to grow on for year three, year four, and the new girls coming in. And especially if most players become seniors, you know, those girls who are going to be there from day one and are day one players in 2 years' time, what are they going to look like? Which is really exciting for you guys.
Yeah, I think that just to respond to that a little bit, I think, you know, we're really excited about one thing that's really hard to recreate if you have a new program, and it is just the urgency that comes with being in your final year or final 2 years of college hockey, right? On the women's side, you know, certainly I think we will, and I hope we have a few players who want to go play pro in Europe or something after the fact, right? But in the end, you know, you've coached on the men's side, I've coached on the boys' side. Until the last moment, there's a belief that I'm going to go play pro when you're on the men's side. On the women's side, they understand that there isn't a livelihood to be had at this moment. And so there's a real commitment to their academics. And so what's my point? My point is that, you know, when you have seniors, when you have juniors, not only for those players, is there this sense of urgency that this is the end. Like this, if we don't win today, it could all be over for me. And that kind of trickles down to your freshmen and sophomores. If you have if you have that family dynamic, well, we just haven't had that. You know, we've been all freshmen and sophomores. And I think that, you know, as a coach, we've tried, but I'll be honest, I'll be vulnerable here. Like, I don't think I've done a great job of getting that through to our players in terms of, hey, when we hit these games or we hit the playoffs, you know, this is it, right? Like, we have to somehow mimic our opponent who has seven seniors who refuses to end their college career today. We have to somehow meet and exceed that energy. And ultimately, you know, we're excited about that as we move forward. Like, I can't force kids to become juniors right away or seniors, but now we'll have a class of juniors, sophomores, freshmen, and we're getting closer to that sense of, you know, non-manufactured, really organic urgency that comes with being a college hockey player in her last year or two.
Yeah, I think that's maybe this COVID time helps players realize and don't take the game as granted for. Maybe that's the way where it's like you have the feeling where you can't play anymore and you don't want to feel that way. So maybe think that that's every single game. It's, you know, I tell players that I work with, like my last game was against the US and, it's just like, it's weird, but it's, I got a concussion and I was kind of, I knew it was that at the end of that tournament, I was going to wrap up playing anyway. But when the game can't, I can't play anymore. Right now, like, I recently had a blood clot and I physically can't play hockey anymore because if I get cut, then I can't do it. So that's the kind of message I always relate to people. And I say to the players as well that we have is like, we're trying to build a program here on the youth side where we want you from 6 years old all the way up to 18. And it should be like one of the worst days of your like life, I say to the girls in a nice way, that, you know, when the last game that you play, you know, it's the last game you play, the last time you wear this jersey, it, because for me, it was the same way in England growing up. It was the last time we played youth hockey. Yeah, we could all play each other and be with each other, the seniors and the pros, but it wasn't the same as you were with your five or six line mates that you always played with. And so I think that's something that you kind of, you can talk to people about, but I think right now with COVID, it might help because some girls will be, you know, real feeling this and like, oh, I haven't been on the ice for 4 months and get that fire and that hunger and kind of can channel that feeling. But so I want to touch real quickly on what do you think the biggest jump between, let's use the selects and the D3 level or the D1 level. Like I always talk about it and say, hey, we're only playing 3 15-minute periods. And if you're a goaltender and you're going to play 3 20s, that's an extra period that you have not played all your life. Also, now you're going to throw in, you've got to be there 2 hours before, an hour and 45 before. Now you're throwing a 20-minute warm-up in. Now you're throwing the ice cuts in between. So the period of the game is so much longer and the concentration levels, not just like the fact that you are going to play more minutes. So like that's how I always internalize it. And it's, I think it's a really tough time to kind of, your first game in college is a free 20-minute and you've never experienced that before.
Yeah.
So I always find that's a tough time myself. But what do you see that players aren't doing right now that could benefit them so when they get to college, they feel like they've been there since day one?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think a couple of things. One, I think they can control. The other, they can't necessarily control, but they should think about. The first that they need to just think about is, you know, we play 25 games. We don't play 60. We don't play 65. Every game is your life. Like every game matters when it comes to playoffs, playoff seeding, when it comes to, you know, and, you know, hopefully at Nazareth, we get to this point, which is, you know, potential at-large bid for the NCAA tournament. You don't get to take a day off. You don't get to, you know, just be average on a given day. And so the idea of consistency in terms of your preparation, your passion and your execution, that's really, really important because we don't have the amount of time that potentially you had in terms of number of games playing AAA. What they can control is a little bit we talked about before, like who has a routine, who's foam rolling, who's taking care of themselves. That stuff translates. You know, your most committed players in terms of the off ice, the strength and conditioning piece, the nutrition piece, the mental health balance piece. They tend to be your most successful players on the ice as well, because for lack of a better term, like, they get it. They understand the need to manage their time and be balanced with how they approach life and they approach things. The other areas that I would say that the players in the U19 level can look at or try to think about is, it is different when you practice 4 days a week and play two games a week for 5 months. It's a lot. It's not just, and I'm not saying just, I don't like that word, but a lot of kids come in having Tuesday practice, Thursday practice, and then a tournament on the weekend. That's a very different structure than the college structure. And when they're in the recruiting process, typically they are so fired up about the idea of being on the ice every day. Every kid's like, coach, yeah, if the ice is open 24 hours, I'll go on for 23 and then I'll sleep for one and go back at it. But then they experience it and they start to feel the mental fatigue, the physical fatigue. Now you're combining your first year of college, so there's an academic piece that can be a little bit overwhelming. So the need to start to prepare mentally for that, I think it's just really, really important. And yes, it's on us as a coaching staff for 5 months to keep it fun, right? To develop our players, to create a culture of high compete, a love of competing against each other, but also a balance of fun so they want to come to the rink every day. But they have to understand that, you know, it's not going to be all sunshine and roses. Like, there's going to be adversity, and adversity maybe in terms of your playing time, but adversity in terms of, you know, the routine of every day. It isn't easy. It takes some getting used to. So I think preparation on that end, I think every program is different. The last thing I'll say, we're big on at Nazareth, and I ask every coach this of a kid we're recruiting: practice habits mean a ton. You know, do you come every day prepared to be great in practice? Because, you know, we don't have 20 players. It's not USA Hockey. Everybody doesn't dress every game, right? There's always a couple kids out of the lineup. So there is a sense of internal competition that is very different from, I would say very different, but it's different from U19, because it's not about, the competition isn't about who's on the power play and who isn't. That's still there. But for some, there's competition about, you know, who's in the lineup this weekend and who's not. And I think that's more part of the culture in the men's game, because they go to play junior and there's, you know, 27, 30 kids, 40 kids on our roster in a given year. In the women's game, there isn't that. And I'm a big believer, right, as we go through our kind of first 4 year cycle, it's my goal to get our roster to, you know, like a 22, 23 number down from like a 26, 27. Because I think with this generation, I think that they're fine with competition. Anybody who says they're not is like sitting on their front porch reminiscing about the past. But what they don't want is, you know, they want competition where there's, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, meaning, you know, we got 22, 23, there's two or three out of the lineup, but there's a real chance I can get back in it. I think it's hard if they don't feel like there's that possibility. So, but I think they got to be preparation for that mentally for a U19 player, that there's competition every single day.
So, you know, you just touched on it there about the men's side and having junior hockey. And it's something that I'm always questioning about as the growth of women's hockey expands. Do you think that a junior league or a kind of a more of a college prep environment would be better for players? Like, you know, the Swedish girl came in, she was about 20 when she came in.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Europeans, like, I know a Euro is going into Yale this year. She's 1999. And it's different, right? They play in the SDHL, they finish school at a later age, maybe they take a gap year, maybe they work for a little bit. And do you see a difference? And obviously from a long-term perspective of the development of the player, I always see there's a rush with Americans, regardless, not with hockey, but regardless, to kind of go straight from high school, straight to school, and it's kind of like the thing you do. Whereas, like, growing up, I took a gap year myself, and it's probably one of the best things that allowed me to really think about my studies and kind of ignite myself and back into school, but also allow me to play hockey and allow me to see how far I can take the game. So do you think that there's going to be a demand for that? And do you think that it's beneficial for some people, because again, with the NCAA rules now, you know, Bulls have done what they did last year and try to commit as many, depends on who they, what school you're talking about. And then June 15th rolls around this year, and those girls will obviously have phone calls. But do you see that that's the way that the women's game's going? And, you know, I always say to our, even our 07 group that we have here coming in, and our 08s, you know, the Peewees, and like, hey, where is hockey going to be in 10, 12 years from now when you are graduating college? You know, and why can't you play professional hockey? Mm-hmm. Because what's happened in 5 years with NWHL and what's happened with PWPHA, like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, you can also go play in Kunlun Red Star in China. Yeah. You know, you could play in the SDHL. You could play in Russia. So just because of college isn't always the end all, but I do you feel that, I guess my question is that a college prep where they are playing 20-minute periods, they are playing at more of a junior environment, and they kind of have it in Canada, but do you feel that that's definitely a need, and that's definitely something that's going to prepare girls more? Like,
yeah, it's a good question. I don't know.
It's more of a conversation, I guess. It's more of a conversation, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard
to answer the question, right? Like,
I think, I don't know if at this moment I would say it's a need, but I do think it's going in that direction. When I was at Selects, we talked a little bit about how we projected there to be more PG candidates as time went on, like that extra gap year. We bounced around and it didn't get much traction, but the idea of like a PG team down the road, you know, a team that maybe wouldn't play USA Hockey, would be independent, non-tournament bound, but a place where European kids and, you know, domestic kids could take that extra year, because ultimately, I do think it's going to be dictated by the colleges and the Division I colleges. If they start to ask kids to take an extra year and place kids wherever they want, whether it's, you know, the PWHL or, you know, somewhere in the States, if that starts to happen, which I think it has a little bit, but if it picks up speed, if it picks up steam, I do think there'll be a place for it. Now, the question I have is, are there enough players to create a viable junior league? I don't know at this point. I think, as you, to your point, like 5-10 years down the road, potentially, like, I think women's hockey, there's just so much enthusiasm around it now, be it the pro leagues, be it, you know, the NHL and the men's side of the NCAA hiring, you know, female coaches, scouts. I think, you know, Nate Lehman on the men's side just hired the woman on his staff who's the video coordinator to do the World Junior Championship. So I think there's just a ton of momentum around it. I my hope is that results in greater popularity at the grassroots level and even better coaching at the grassroots level, so that just the numbers increase. They are going up, but I don't know if they're there right now for there to be a viable junior league. And just, I don't know if this is being cynical, but on the men's side, the USA Hockey, I think, did a good thing by making the USHL the only tier one option, because that funnels, for the most part, all the best players there. I think on the women's side, there's still just, you know, there's options over here, there's options over there, there's options. And so, you know, directing all the best talent to kind of one area, I don't think we're there, and I don't know how close we are to being there, but we'd certainly benefit if there was a little bit of that model, because those kids would, you know, those kids would be, you know, playing against great talent every day and developing. But, you know, to be honest, like, I'm still learning. Like, I'm 5 years into the women's game, and one of my first questions was, why doesn't USA Hockey have a, you know, a women's NTDP? And I was, what I was told was a lot of it had to do with just depth, you know, depth of talent, and how it would, how there'd be an effect on just the U19 youth. If you just took, you know, the top 40 kids out of U19, U16 youth women's hockey, what effect would that have on, you know, kind of the rest of those levels? But yeah, I don't know if I answered your question there, but
no, it's
I do think we're
going to
have more kids coming later. I mean, it's a conversation, like, what's your take? Meaning, I don't know. I'm a coach. So one thing I enjoy is the fact that our kids come in at 18. So the kid you get at 18 is going to be different from the kid who graduates at 22. There's still a lot of development to be had.
Yeah.
On the men's side, you know, I think the kid who goes in at 21, there's still growth to be had, but it's a lot closer to a finished product. Like, you know what you're getting when it comes to the 21-year-old freshman. So there's, you know, it's a little bit different in that regard, but I don't know. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I just see, like, personally, unless it's a really good fit, I don't think you should necessarily have to rush to go straight to college. Mm-hmm. The European way, like, a lot of my Scandinavian friends, they take 2 or 3 year gap years. And they go at like 20, 21, regardless of out sport. And they also finish gymnasium if they're in Sweden a little bit later anyway. I just see there's a rush to kind of go jump straight into something when you haven't necessarily explored all options as well. Mm-hmm. But I always tell players, like, I've got a player right now, he plays at Colgate, and he just finished his freshman year. And, you know, we're talking about after, you know, when he finishes, and I'm like, why don't you just go play in Europe? Like, it's like, the job's going to be there for you. You know, you live in New York City. Yeah, we know you could probably end up on Wall Street because of what you're studying. And like, but play for as long as you want. Like, the game doesn't have to finish. Like, you can go get an MBA for most of these European teams. And I think, and he's like, really? I didn't know anything about that. So I think there's definitely a lot of disconnects of understanding the landscape of things. And I'm just like, for instance, the European players don't really understand the landscape of, you know, they're like, well, why do I need to go play in America when I could play in the SDHL and get a free university degree here as it is?
Yeah.
And I'm playing good hockey. Like, why do I need to do that? Why do I need to uproot and learn a different language and study and all these things? So I think there's a lot of, like, questions around it. But I think if you want to be the best hockey player you can possibly be, or the best athlete you could possibly be, and if you really believe that if you took another year or 2 years, that you could still achieve your goals. And yeah, people would say, well, you're pretty late to the party, or maybe the spots aren't there. If you have no idea what could happen. Like, I've got a D1 program right now looking for a defenseman in September.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, hang on, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
You know, and she's looking like, there's not really that many in the States right now. And it doesn't make a difference when you get there. It's basically if you get there, right? And that kind of goes with Pia as well. Like, the Slovenian goalie, she played in Finland last year, and Mark's gonna take her next year. She's 1999, her birth year, and she's going as a freshman. So I think, so that's what I'm really, like, kind of, just because you're not in the prep school scene, or you are potentially, maybe you've been playing boys hockey and you've come across and you haven't been to the exposure and the clinics, like. And I think that's something that a lot of the girls do get wrapped up in as well, and trying to attend, you know, because let's be honest, in the summer, you can go to an exposure clinic every single weekend, every single day. There's selects, there's this other elite program, there's like this camp with 10 coaches, and then you go to another camp and the same coaches are there, it's just a different name. And so I think that can kind of weigh on a lot of players as well, and they feel like they're doing. But if you're just kind of, you know, as any athlete, you've got your own things that you've got to work on and to get better and to get stronger. And you should have your own plan created for yourself that you need, not just going on the ice and kind of running your wheels. And if you really believe that, hey, I'm a Division I player, and just because you graduated high school, if you really believe you're a Division I player, then go out there and prove it, and go out there and get better. And then if what's the worst that could happen? You're going to fail and end up in D3 or end up in somewhere else. Like, so that's how I see it. Like, I think there has to be just a little bit more, and not maybe accepting, because obviously you do have PGs and everything else, and you have people who get decommitted and people who make an early decision that maybe it's not the best interest of them or their family.
Yeah.
But I'm really just interested in, like, you know, if players, like, if I have a European player and she tells me I want to make the Olympics, then I say, okay, well, what happens if you don't make it when you finish college? Are you still going to keep playing hockey? And then they're like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, well, you told me you want to play in the Olympics. Like, it may happen when you're 28, not 24.
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of talk to them about it. And I think it's with the growth of women's hockey, and it's the growth of what's, as more professional avenues open up, I think it's definitely something that, from if we're talking about developing players to the best of their fullest potential, you know, it's something that I like to kind of just sort of have a conversation about, and everyone's different and not one size fits all. And someone going at 18 is great for them, but someone going at 21, that's also great for them. Right. Like, it's definitely something that I think will we'll see. Well, we'll see, right? It's something that's always going to evolve.
It is. I wonder, Sam, though, I wonder how much of it, it just has to come with time. Meaning, you know, you get those people who are on the forefront of it, you know, who take the extra year, like the goalie, the 99 from Europe going to Yale, the kids who do the PG year at whatever, you know, a Bell Tire or at one of the prep schools, and them doing it, them finding success. And with that, now it kind of, there's less risk, I guess, if you're, you know, if you've seen other people do it and do it well, and then maybe it just becomes part of the cultural norm. And maybe we're just at the front part of that. And as it can, cause I do think it will continue to happen. Like, you know, a friend of mine once said, like, years ago, you know, he said that, you know, the women's game is like 3 to 5 years behind the men's game. And he didn't mean like skill development. He didn't mean like quality of play. He just meant in terms of like trending a little bit. Like, and you kind of saw it, right? The early commitment thing started in the men's game, and then it found its way to the women's game. Decommitment started in the men's game. I don't think they found their way to the women's game too much before they rejiggered the rules last year. But the idea of PGs and the extra year, it's starting to find its way into the women's game. And I think that, you know, as more women find it to be a successful path, you know, I think more will do it. Because to your point, you know, like, one, you graduate at 22 or 24, 25, the real world's there for you for the next 40 years. It'll be, you know, it's not going anywhere, right? So I think you said, like, you know, play as long as you can. I think there's real value to that, not because you're just a hockey nut, but because the sport can let you travel the world. The sport can introduce you to so many people. And, you know, as you know, I think hockey is the very, it's a very loyal sport when it comes to networking and job opportunities when your career is done. And the more people you meet, the more likely you are to land in a really good spot post-career. So I agree with everything you said. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how long it takes for it maybe to become part of the societal norm, hockey societal norm, for women to take an extra year or two and then jump into college.
Yeah, and again, it's going to be something that evolves over time, and it's something that I think, yeah, no one has a crystal ball, but it's also like no one has a crystal ball how September will look right now and how the season will work. I think we all plan, I'm assuming you guys are planning for normal and making contingency plans. And I think a lot of colleges are lucky that the season doesn't restart until late October, and that can be pushed back a little bit because it is, there aren't so many games, and there's ways to extend the season into kind of the May period, so, like, as well. So, wrapping up now, like, so how would players, like, how do they get in contact? Do you like the email? Do you like people picking up the phone and calling you? So if there was a potential recruit out there listening, you know, how would you want them to make that first point of contact, and then how they follow up with you?
Yeah. You know, so for us, I would say jump onto the Nazareth website, check it out, see what you think. See if it fits your desired major of study, and you like the pictures, all the stuff that comes with that. If you do, there's a questionnaire on there, fill that out. And typically, not typically, but I'm a really big believer that no matter where a kid comes from, if they do fill out our questionnaire, I'm going to reach out to them just to say thanks for filling it out and be available to answer questions. And then from there, you know, once we connect over email, if a player or recruit wants to talk over the phone, we want to do that. We want to be able to answer questions for them. And then just, we found with this generation that text message is what they prefer relative to communication. We'll sprinkle in some phone calls and right now some like Zoom calls with the family. But the starting point would be to investigate the school a little bit, investigate the college. If it feels like it could be a nice fit for you, if you feel like there's a video on there, which is, it's not a podcast, but, you know, it's like a recruiting video, so it speaks to our philosophy and our approach. If that resonates, you know, send us a note, and then let's begin communication, and we'll see if it's a fit for both sides down the road.
Awesome. All right, Chris, really appreciate your time.
All right, Sam. Thanks a ton. Right. Have a great day.
So that's.